This episode is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm that gets that cookie-cutter thinking doesn't cut it in today's tech industry. Grant Thornton listens first, tailoring solutions to evolve with your business, whatever comes next. More at gt.com.
This is your tech news briefing for Wednesday, May 11th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. When SoftBank launched its Vision Fund in 2017, its CEO said the fund would make the company a goose that lays golden eggs. So, 5 years later, why is the fund that supercharged the tech boom trailing the wider market and other VC funds? On today's show, our reporter Elliot Brown joins us to discuss the Vision Fund and tech stocks' wider struggles. That's after these headlines. Elon Musk says he'd reverse Twitter's ban on former President Donald Trump. Speaking at an autos conference hosted by the Financial Times, Musk called the ban a morally bad decision. He said it alienated a large part of the country and that permanent bans undermine trust in Twitter. Musk is in the process of buying Twitter for $44 billion. Earlier this week, he met with Europe's Commissioner for the Internal Market and assured the EU regulator that under his control, Twitter would comply with the EU's new Digital Services Act, or DSA. The new rules, which could go into effect as early as 2024, would require major social media platforms to swiftly address illegal content and conduct regular risk assessments, among other measures, or else face hefty fines. In a video, Musk and the commissioner said they were on the same page about the bloc's new rules.
I think we're very much of the same mind, and I think anything that my companies can do that would be beneficial to Europe, we want to do that.
The U.S., U.K., and European Union are all blaming Russia for a cyber attack in February that left thousands of Ukrainians and Europeans without internet. The hack against the satellite provider Viasat also affected wind farms in Europe. According to an EU official, the attack took place just an hour before Russia invaded Ukraine. Russia has consistently denied launching cyber attacks. Last night, Coinbase reported a net loss of nearly $430 million last quarter, worse than analysts had expected. Transaction fees, which make up most of the crypto exchange's revenue, fell substantially. And the number of monthly transacting users also declined. Our crypto editor, Jenna Teleska, says Coinbase is often seen as a bellwether for the crypto market.
People like to watch Coinbase also because it's the biggest crypto exchange in the U.S. And one thing that's been interesting to watch is the level of professional traders, like hedge funds, using the platform. Institutional investor trades now outnumber individual investor trades. Some crypto enthusiasts have been saying that Bitcoin is an inflation hedge, but we're not seeing that. Cryptocurrencies and crypto companies like Coinbase are falling alongside other speculative bets.
Ahead of the earnings announcement, shares of Coinbase had fallen 13% on Tuesday. They're down more than 70% since the start of the year. And get ready to say goodbye to the iPod. Apple is discontinuing the portable music player, which revolutionized the music industry when it was introduced in 2001. The device was a smash hit. It helped Steve Jobs transform the company, extending its reach from computers into gadgets and other personal devices. But with the growth of smartphones, including the iPhone, demand for the iPod shrunk. Now Apple says its iPod Touch will only be available while supplies last. After the news was announced, our senior personal tech columnist, Joanna Stern, reached the iPod's creator, Tony Fadell, by phone. He said he thought it was inevitable that the iPod would be discontinued, but
I do think in the world there is a place for the iPod because of its pure music only or music and photos without all the distractions of communications and internet and, you know, people feeding on your attention. I do believe those things should exist in the world. I do believe the iPod should go on. It may not be in Apple's, you know, business interest, but I do believe that that product should exist.
All right, coming up, SoftBank's Vision Fund rode the tech boom. Now it's riding a tech bust. What can the fund do to keep its vision alive? We'll discuss after the break.
This podcast is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm you share something with, listening. They take the time to understand you and your business so you get the best solution, not more noise. Start a conversation at gt.com.
SoftBank's Vision Fund has a reputation for making large, risky bets. When the $100 billion fund kicked off 5 years ago, it had the goal of funding a whole generation of future tech giants, and it's backed some major names in the industry. But despite what was once seen as a bold and visionary investment style, the fund, with its tech-heavy holdings, has fallen into an embarrassing position, lagging behind the wider market. So, how did the Vision Fund come into this position? Joining us to discuss this ahead of SoftBank's earnings report tomorrow is WSJ reporter Elliot Brown. Hi, Elliot. Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here.
Can you start by telling us what the Vision Fund's, you know, investment style and strategy has been?
So if you go back to 2017, when the Vision Fund was founded and sort of launched with $100 billion or nearly $100 billion of money, the strategy very quickly became spend enormous amounts of money on kind of a relatively small number of startups in a very quick period. So it was SoftBank CEO Masayoshi Son that became known for finding founders, meeting them, and then giving them more money than they were asking for. And so it just was so supersized compared to anything else anyone had seen in startup land, where you had this company literally writing multi-billion dollar checks to founders that, you know, had large losses already in their businesses.
And what was the justification for that? I mean, why throw so much money at some of these companies?
There's a lot of semi-contradictory answers to that that have come about over the years. I'd say the biggest issue is that Masason from SoftBank really just wanted to get in the ground floor of the next internet boom. And he just was super optimistic about where tech was going and figured if he floods the zone and gets a stake in a lot of these big consumer-focused companies, then he's going to find the next Google and Alibaba. Now, there was slightly more nuance. Sometimes they thought, a lot of the thinking was, well, if you give somebody so much money, they'll be able to beat out their competitors and be the essentially a monopoly that wins at the end of the day. But the reality is they gave a lot of money to a lot of companies that weren't even in businesses where that model could apply. And then other companies ended up still having competition. And there's this fun wrinkle where SoftBank sometimes gave money to two different companies that then used SoftBank's money against each other. And so SoftBank money was burning against SoftBank money to try to compete.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the bets that did pay off well. I mean, what are things that are really still paying off for SoftBank and its investment?
So, I mean, probably the best example is Coupang, which is this South Korean e-commerce company. And SoftBank put in eventually under $3 billion into the company. And when it went public last year, about a year ago, that became like worth $28 or $29 billion. So they made over $25 billion briefly on paper. Now, the problem is they couldn't sell it first. It's a standard. And they have to wait. And the stock market, tech stocks and Coupang have really plunged since. So that $25 billion profit is now less than $6 billion. So that's a much smaller number.
Yeah, and that's kind of what we're citing as a good investment. So what were some of the investments that maybe haven't worked out as well?
Some of them have sort of been much discussed. Like there was WeWork, SoftBank overall, not just the Vision Fund, put over $10 billion into this company that's worth like $6 or $5 billion today total. And that's what the company's worth. The investment is worth even less. And they put money into Uber at sort of a decent level, but they're well underwater right now on that. They invested in a dog walking company. That was a small investment, but it did very poorly. They put $3 billion into a construction startup that went, you know, essentially to zero, Katerra. And then more recently, they've really run into trouble with their biggest single bet, which was Didi, China's version of Uber, the ride-hailing company there. They put over $12 billion into Didi. And that investment now is worth less than $1.7 billion.
What's behind this? Is this just a matter of putting kind of too much money into too many risky bets?
Yeah, I think there's two things. The first is the Vision Fund's strategy. It simply has trailed the broad stock market, which is just really not a good way to put money if you're trying to beat the stock market, which is what you do with these private funds. And so, you know, there was the strategy aspect, and that led to sort of blow-ups like WeWork. And then there's more recently just the macro. So SoftBank has, you know, just in the past 6 months has been a victim of the market like everybody else. And they just happened to be the biggest player because they had raised this fund and put so much to work. So when, you know, interest rates started rising, they were sitting there with, you know, $138 billion fund that now is losing very large amounts of money because it is just a very large fund that happens to be in tech.
And how does its investment kind of compare to other VCs and to the wider market?
Yeah, so we don't really have VC returns yet, but as of a few months ago, or, you know, fall 2021, they were significantly lagging the average VC fund. And the average VC fund tends not to even be that great. You really want to be one of the top VC funds in order to beat the market. And the NASDAQ has roughly doubled in 5 years. And, you know, that's the tech index that you'd want to compare yourself to. The Vision Fund now looks like it's just going to be a completely meager return, like at best, you know, maybe 10 to 20% above where it started 5 years ago. So that's just really not a good return, you know, for, again, the world's largest private investment fund.
What is the Vision Fund doing to kind of offset this poor performance? Because it's got another, what, 5 years to run?
Largely, the biggest changes they made were a couple of years ago when they kind of realized that the strategy of giving money to brash founders and giving them many billions of dollars to increase their spending was not a great one. So they've shifted away from that. They really aren't making new investments out of the Vision Fund. They're only sort of continuing to fund some older, you know, companies that they backed. And now they have their own Vision Fund 2, which is just SoftBank. It doesn't have outside investors. And for that, they've taken a much broader market approach. They aren't just doing these lumpy giant checks. They're trying to sort of spread money throughout the market and just sort of ride the market overall. They aim more at software companies, which tend to sort of have more nimble business models. Of course, that fund, too, is really a victim of the broad market, but at least it's less guided by these really strategic errors.
I mean, we've talked about SoftBank strategy, and you've also mentioned kind of the broader market trends. What is this kind of situation for the Vision Fund, but also the broader market? Kind of tell us about what tech stocks are going to do and what investors should be expecting from them.
Yeah, I mean, I think SoftBank is a bit of a bellwether for the broader sort of startup investor landscape. And, you know, right now it's just really, really tough place to be a big investor in startups. You're watching all your public stocks plunge, you know, by really extraordinary margins. I mean, a lot of these high growth stocks are down 70%, you know, as sort of a group. And you sort of are looking at private companies that you have that are hoping to one day go public and realizing that any dreams you had where they were going to be super high valued are probably in the past. Obviously, things can change. This can be a blip. You know, the Fed can do things. But right now, that's what it's looking like.
All right. That's our reporter, Elliot Brown. Thanks for joining us, Elliot.
Thanks for having me.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm that gets that cookie-cutter thinking doesn't cut it in today's tech industry. Grant Thornton listens first, tailoring solutions to evolve with your business, whatever comes next. More at gt.com.